Code COOL for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code COOL for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com presents the Mid-Columbia Today Show with Mark Bailey. Special thanks to our sponsors, Skyline Health and Del Carpine Automotive. Now, here's Mark Bailey.
And good morning. It is 8:04. I'm Mark Bailey, Mid-Columbia Today. It is a Tuesday, heading into the middle part of the week. Here's what we're doing this morning. Hood River County School District Superintendent Bill Newton's here. We'll talk to him. They are asking those of you in the Hood River County School District to participate in their annual strategic plan survey. It's underway on their website. It's got about another week to go. We'll talk a little bit about that. Second half of the program, White Sand Mayor Marla Keebler. They have got coming up on Thursday an open house on the Bluff Trail project they're doing. So we'll talk to her about that most certainly. But first, as we I'm not going to quite get there yet. We should address the ball game last night, I suppose, for you Mariner fans out there. That was an excruciating way to lose. I get that. In the end, the Blue Jays were able to get more contributions from the bottom part of their order, and that's what set up the George Springer home run. Seven-hole hitter reaches, eight-hole hitter reaches base, nine-hole hitter sacrifices them over, and puts then the Mariners in a horrible spot because you may have been yelling at your TV, intentionally walked George Springer. Well, okay, here's the problem with that. Unless you get a double play against Lucas behind him, you're facing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And do you really want to do that with a pennant on the line, with bases loaded? There wasn't a good option for Dan Wilson at that point. There was not. And for the I've seen some of the stuff about, oh, why didn't they bring Andres Munoz in? Okay, Andres Munoz has not done a two-plus inning save. He hasn't. You have no idea if he can pull that off. So Wilson went with what the bridge that they've used all season long. In fact, actually, it was less of a bridge because they used a normal starter in Wu to get him a couple innings. So the idea that somehow Munoz, he might have got him out of that jam, but you go to the ninth, okay, now what? And so you may say, well, you got to get to the ninth. Well, Lizardo had pitched well for him all year in that bridge role. He just threw a pitch that George Springer drilled in the left field bleachers. It happens. Unfortunately, it happened in this case in the bottom of the seventh inning to give the other team the lead in the game to decide the pennant. But anyway, Dodgers Blue Jays start Friday night. I'm fairly confident. But then again, I guess if you root for a team that spends $500 million on payroll, you ought to be confident. Anyway, here's what this day has meant and what it means, at least to some people. 1797, the U.S. Navy frigate Constitution, known as Old Ironsides, was christened in Boston's harbor. 1805, a British fleet commanded by Admiral Horatio Nelson defeated a French-Spanish fleet in the Battle of Trafalgar. Nelson, however, was killed. 1940, Ernest Hemingway's novel, For Whom the Bell Tolls, was first published. 1944, U.S. troops captured the German city of Aachen, the first German city to fall to American forces in World War II. 1959, the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed Guggenheim Museum opened in New York. 1966, 144 people, 116 of them children, were killed when a coal waste landslide engulfed a school and some 20 houses in Wales. 2013, a seventh grader at Sparks Middle School in Sparks, Nevada, shot and killed a teacher and wounded two classmates before taking his own life. 2014, Paralympic runner Oscar Pistorius is convicted of culpable homicide for shooting and killing his girlfriend, Reba Steenkamp. The conviction later upgraded to murder. Pistorius was released on parole last January. Actually, January 2024. In 2021, actor Alec Baldwin was pointing a gun on a movie set in New Mexico when it went off and killed cinematographer Halina Hutchins and wounded director Joel Souza. Charges of involuntary manslaughter against Baldwin were dropped in July of last year. Got a few days for today. It is Babbling Day today, which I probably have done a little bit on this show, in fact. It is Celebration of the Mind Day today. It's Count Your Buttons Day for some reason. Information Overload Awareness Day today. That's something we all should probably be thinking about, by the way. You know, we get inundated with information. And knowing when to turn it off is a good skill to have. It's National Share the Warmth Day. It is National Pets for Veterans Day today. National Pharmacy Technician Day. And is Reptile Awareness Day today. Our food, it's Garbanzo Bean Day today. It's Bolognese Ragu Day today. It's Apple Day, primarily in the UK, but we'll celebrate it here. National Pumpkin Cheesecake Day, if you're looking for dessert. But I save this one for last because I love these. It is International Day of the Nacho. Plateful sounds good. Actually, in the morning, really, it's not that great. But later on in the evening, you know, watching the game, whatever. That's a good one. So there it all is for what it's worth. May not be a whole lot. 8:10 in the morning. We will come back and talk to Bill Newton, Hood River County School District Superintendent, right after this.
So, do you want to hit the range this weekend?
Well, sounds good. I do want to pick up some ammo and supplies first, though.
Yeah, me too. Have you seen those red dot sights? They help even a mediocre shot like me hit the target every time.
Oh, wow. I've seen you shoot. That is impressive.
I know, right? Wait, what?
Gorge Guns is on target for all your shooting supplies and accessories. You want to talk or learn anything and everything about guns? You'll find it at Gorge Guns. This is Travis Arney, 25-year industry professional, firearms aficionado, and Gorge Guns general manager. Trust Gorge Guns for the service, knowledge, and solutions you want for hunting and self-defense. At our beautiful new location of the only gun shop in Hood River, you'll find firearms, scopes, suppressors, ammo, accessories, in-house modifications and installations, ARs, class referrals, target practice info, appraisals, and gunsmith referrals. It's all at Gorge Guns in our new location, 1040 Tucker Road, Hood River. Online at gorgeguns.com. Gorge Guns, the best little gun shop in the gorge.
Bring the whole family to Casa El Mirador every Wednesday, where kids 10 and under eat free. That's right, get one free kids entree with the purchase of an adult entree, limit two. Treat yourself to your favorite Mexican dishes while the little ones enjoy a delicious meal on us. With plenty of kid-friendly options, both Mexican and American favorites, there's something for everyone. Make it a midweek family night at Casa El Mirador at 2nd and Weber in the Dalles. Don't miss out. Kids eat free every Wednesday at Casa El Mirador.
Hey Hood River, we love a good block party, so now we're bringing the party to you all year long. Every month, Farmgrass Table Dispensary is giving away a locals package valued at over $300. Gifts from right here in the Gorge. Spa days, restaurant meals, unique local experiences, and more. And here's the fun part. Any day could be Plinko Day. Stop in, drop the puck, and see if you're the big winner. The prizes happen all year long. Visit Farmgrass Table today, and maybe you'll take home the next monthly prize.
Do not operate a vehicle or machinery under the influence of this drug. For use by adults 21 years of age or older. Keep out of reach of children.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, 98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark Bailey.
It is 8:12 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today as Bill Newton, Hood River County School District Superintendent, is with us. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Mark.
Let us jump into some things here. We got a few things to talk about. First of all, until next Tuesday on your website, you have the annual strategic plan survey.
Correct.
So what are you asking people to take part in?
Well, so we are, this school year is the last year of our 5-year strategic plan. And so we are in the beginning phases of developing a new strategic plan that'll begin in the 26-27 school year. And so at our last board work session on October 8th, we kicked it off spending time with our school board, asking them questions and trying to get their input on what they would like to envision for our new strategic plan. And so that kicked it off. Mm-hmm. And now we have a survey that's being pushed out to our families and to our community, asking for their feedback as well on what they would like to see as far as a new vision for our strategic plan for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to be followed by me going around over the next couple of months and doing listening sessions, mm-hmm. both with staff as well as at like our PTO events. Mm-hmm. We'll have some time either before or after the PTO meetings in order to be able to solicit parent input. Mm-hmm.
So what do you include in a strategic plan? We probably should note this is different from what we've talked about on this show here a few times lately,
yeah.
the long-range planning that you do,
yes.
that's more facilities.
More facilities, exactly.
Even though I know they intertwine, I mean, mm-hmm. in some way, but
yeah.
what do you put in a strategic plan? When I think of what the goal of a school district is, I admit, I tend to get very basic.
Yeah. Here. So
educate students to prepare them to have a quality life.
Correct. Yep. Yeah.
So what else do we put in this?
So, you know, at the beginning, it's our mission statement, which is every student graduates with the knowledge to learn, serve, and pursue their dreams. Right. And then from that, then we do have specific goals under what we call core values, like student learning and growth. And so under that, then we have specific actions in order to improve, like, academic outcomes. Mm-hmm. We have that. You know, another one would be, like, safety and security. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we doing to take actionable steps to make sure that our students feel safe and our staff feel safe and that our facilities are safe for our students? And so those are, like, just a couple of examples, Mark, that we have incorporated into a strategic plan.
So, I mean, you do this, I think you review this actually every year.
We do review it every year, yes, definitely. But this is the year that we are actually putting together the five-year plan. And then every year thereafter, we will then have a conversation about how we are doing with meeting the goals that we have written and making any adjustments along the way.
I guess where I go to is, I wouldn't think the end goals change much from year to year because what you do.
Yep.
But what does tend to get revised in these sort of things? I mean, what is it just more the specifics?
Yeah, I would say our actions.
Okay.
You know, the last, you know, school improvement plan was written, in 2019, 2020?
Mm-hmm.
And so things change. You
sure.
know, during that time, it was the pandemic. And I would say during that time, a lot of objectives, a lot of actions were written. And so I would anticipate as we develop this new strategic plan that we are not going to be so broad, and we're going to be probably a little bit more focused on some key outcomes that we want to get at.
Now, you said school improvement plan. Is that the same thing we're talking about, or is that even a different plan?
So that's different. So once you have your strategic plan, then each school has a school improvement plan.
Oh, okay, their own. You break out. Okay.
Correct. And that aligns with the strategic plan, though.
Because I start to get a little bureaucratic here. It's like, how many plans do you need for the basic goal of educating students?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And what the schools are doing, though, when they write their own school improvement plan is they are basically taking these larger goals, these larger district goals, and making them fit what they see as, you know, their specific needs at their school. Because each school is a little bit unique depending on where you are.
So next week it's going to be open, this survey, until the 28th, which is next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then you'll go into the listening session.
Correct.
Part of this deal.
Yeah, and so families, you know, people that are listening today, they can go onto our website and they can find the information related to the strategic plan survey and actually click on the link and complete the survey.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the long-range plan, the facilities plan,
yeah,
where are you on that at this point? I think the last time we talked about a month or 2 months ago, I know you spent the summer going on a tour, basically.
Correct.
with a committee.
Yep.
I think you're still on the tour.
Yeah, so we finished that up. We have done all of our tours of all of our facilities in order to be able to highlight, you know, what we see as needs at each of the schools and department buildings. Last week, we had our long-range facilities planning committee meeting, and let me remind people, you know, that's made up of staff as well as community members, parents, and so forth. And last week, what we did is we brought in a person from Piper Sandler Investment Firm to talk to us about, you know, what could potential bonds look like and what would tax rates look like and so forth, just to give our committee kind of a sense as to what that would look like if we were to go out for a bond in a year from now. And so we had those conversations. That was good to kind of lay the groundwork there. Following that meeting, you know, our next couple of meetings are going to be taking a look at our priority lists, because we do have, you know, priority lists at each of the schools, each of the buildings, as far as, like, what are the needs, what, you know, what rises to the top. And so we will be taking a look at those and really trying to get an idea as far as, like, if we do want to go out for a bond in fall of 2026, what are the key things that we want to focus on?
Do you, because you mentioned you've kind of got priority lists. If we were to add up the priority list, and I know it'll be more than you'd ever ask for in a bond measure.
Yeah.
Because that's always the way it works.
Yep.
I mean, how much would...
It's a lot, you know, and I'll just give you an example. So, You know, we haven't added up our own list that we in the school district have developed, but okay. I would also say that the state has actually been doing this work. They tasked each school district to have basically a, you know, an assessment done at each of the schools, each of the buildings, in order to determine for the state what the costs are for bringing them back up to the standard for which they were built. And that's not adding on like HVAC and that kind of thing, but just bringing them back to the standards for which they were built. So if a school was built in 1970, bringing it back to that.
And most schools, by the way, are probably that vintage or
yeah.
older.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll go on a limb and say older around the state.
Correct.
Which makes me go, what is the purpose of even doing that for the state? Because frankly, I mean, I wouldn't be building a building without HVAC right now. I mean, and expect students to learn, given how warm it is when we start the school year and how around here, how bloody cold it will be in the middle of
it. So two things. First thing is, you know, what that assessment told us for our school district is that, you know, over, I would say, 10 to 20 years, we're looking at about $200 million in fixes that need to bring them back up to that standard. So that's a lot of money there. The second thing, why the state is asking us to do that is because we know that there are a lot of school districts in our state that do not have the means in order to be able to improve their facilities. You see, you know, bonds that are being put forth to voters in some of our smaller communities and what have you, and they're not passing, and it's because it's expensive. And so the state recognizes that. They have basically charged over the next 5 years to go out and get this information, bring it to the state legislature to chew on. You know, like, this is what the true costs are for all of these older buildings in our state in order to bring them, you know, back up to a certain standard. You know, what they do with that, who knows? But, you know, it's good that they are at least asking that question in order to be able to get a number.
I mean, I would say at least it dovetails what you're doing right now.
Correct.
So it's you know, I doubt it's that big a deal for you to put together, really. But I just sit there and go, if the goal is to bring these buildings back to what they were when they were built 75 years ago, I find that to be just... I want to mock it basically at that point.
And that's not what our long range facility.
No, I know that's not what you're doing.
Correct.
Well, the local level doesn't do that.
Yes.
I'm pointing the finger directly at the state level in this case.
Yeah. Yep.
So
a little bit different.
Bring up Oregon State government, and there I go again.
Yeah.
Solar microgrid contract.
Yeah.
This is something we talked about a couple of years ago.
So this Wednesday at our school board meeting, which is going to be down at Cascade Locks, we have in front of the board for their approval of the YEAST microgrid contract. And so we've patched together enough grants in order to be able to actually put this into play. And so we're actually going to start doing the electrical work, putting the solar panels in order to be able to have this basically where that electricity that is generated can then, like in a power outage in our community, that electricity that is generated can then be stored on a school bus. And that bus we just recently purchased. We actually have it on site. It's a really interesting, cool-looking bus. But it can store that energy, and then it can repower the gyms at YEAST. So if we need to have a shelter, you have a bus that can actually help make that go, and the solar panels to make it go.
I said to ask you this off the air, but I'll ask you on air because I feel obligated now. Anything that involves a grant that came from even the state level, because it probably is a pass-through grant, or the federal level at this point, is the money actually there?
That's our belief. It's actually there. And, you know, we were, you know, concerned for sure. With many of our grants, we're concerned as to whether or not we're receiving them. And so, but with this one, we feel like we've got the money and we can move forward.
Attendance is a subject apparently you're starting to address with you said community partners.
Yeah.
So I didn't you told me off air. So I mean, when you say community partners, we talk about trying to encourage kids to go to school. Who are we talking about?
So we're talking about anywhere from like our health providers, you know, people from the city, people from the county. You know, the chamber was there. We had people from like the sheriff's office, police department. You know, I would say a lot of different, you know, mental health practitioners and so forth. And the whole idea, so we met yesterday for an hour and a half with our community partners because we recognize if we want to tackle and improve our attendance in our schools, we can't do that alone, that it involves in a community involvement. And so the conversation was, you know, what are some things that we could do as a community in order to be able to get at this issue that we have in our school district?
So what is attendance like in the school district? Because quite frankly, when I look at your graduation rates at the end, which are, which have been much higher than the state averages, 90% plus for years now, that would indicate to me that attendance is all right. I mean, maybe I know you want perfect. I get that. And that you always should strive for it. No issue there.
For sure.
But my point just being is I would think you're coming from a pretty good place here right now.
Yeah, we're doing good at getting kids to the finish line. I'm not going to say that we're not.
Right.
But we can be doing better. And where part of that starts is with attendance. And so, you know, we do have, I want to say, 2 years ago, our attendance rate was, we had reached it, gotten it up to like 74% this past school year. It actually dropped down to 71%. So we didn't continue to make the momentum that we had anticipated. See, and so
that number to me is so low.
Yeah,
it is 74%, low. 74%, it's low. I'm thinking, if a workplace was operating with 1/4 absenteeism, it wouldn't do well.
Yeah. So let me clarify the numbers a little bit. Okay. So when we say 71% of our students are attending regularly, that means that they are attending less than 90% of the time, which means over the course of a year, they are missing more than 17 days of school, almost 2 days a month.
You know,
so over you know, like 29% of our students are actually missing 17 or more school days a year, and that's a lot.
Is it an issue at certain grade levels? Does it change over the grade levels?
For sure. Yeah, the older you get, the more you see that attendance rate decline.
At what point is somebody just... Do we use the word dropout anymore?
Yeah. So once you... Legally, by state definition, once you get to 10 school days where a student has attended, then we do need to drop them from our roles.
Or has not attended.
Has not attended. Yeah. And if that's the case, then we drop them from our roles. And then when they do come back, then we enroll them and continue on.
I guess, though, let's go into the why a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Why does this happen? It's got to be varied. I understand that.
Yeah. So, you know, prior to the pandemic, we were actually doing really well. You know, in the mid-80s, close pushing to 90% of our students were attending regularly. Mm-hmm. Since the pandemic, though, we've seen that decline. And I would say habits have changed. And it's hard to be able to change habits. And so I think for us, that's something that we really need to wrestle with. We know that our students and our families are struggling more with, you know, mental health and anxiety and so forth. So these are things that we need to also address.
I hear a little bit about this because, of course, being involved with the high school athletic programs.
Yeah.
And I admit, and having had a wife who was a former teacher.
Yeah.
I would hear about, like, people taking their kids out of school for vacations, which just seemed... I don't know.
We
can't even grasp it, to be honest, given my upbringing.
We have that. You know, we do have families with means in which to travel, and so they do it, you know. And it just doesn't mean like during the summer break or the winter break, but, you know, if they see a good deal, you know, on the airlines or what have you, they'll, some will, you know, take off and go on a trip.
How much does child care and quite frankly, low income play a role here?
Well, I would like to think that, you know, as far as attendance, we provide that for our families. So, so as far as like, you know, that being an impact, I'm not necessarily seeing that, Mark.
Do you get a chance to quiz parents as to why? You know, when you're dealing with these situations?
Oh, for sure. You know, when you are at the school level having a conversation with a parent whose child is struggling, you know, it can vary. At the high school level, you can hear where, you know, it's been a pattern for time, and it's hard to change that habit again. And they're getting to the age and the size and what have you where, you know, they, you know, it's hard for the parent to be able to get their child to school. You know, at the elementary level, it's a little bit easier, I would say, for the parent to be able to, like, get them to school. But still, there are challenges at all levels.
Knowing the demographics of your enrollment, how much is there a problem? Can you mention the drop in the last year?
Yeah.
How much does, frankly, fear of immigration involved here?
Well, I would say, so we do break it down by demographics, and I do believe, you know, we don't have like a gap we would like with our student outcomes. It is more, what you're talking about here, like with our migrant students and what have you, it is definitely a reality that we hear about and a concern. What we are conveying to our families, though, is school is a safe place. We have processes and procedures in place. You know, should someone show up and is asking for a student or asking to know if a student is there, we have strict processes and procedures that our front office staff, that our administrators and school employees know to follow in order to make sure that school is a safe place for all of our students.
Mm-hmm. Where do you have the discussion? Where do you take this from here as with trying to get the attendance rates up? Because I've always sat there and gone, it's difficult for a school in the end. I mean, you can't just go out and round people up. That's not what you do.
Yep.
It would not be worth it from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
I think with our community partners, having them be a key player with sharing the message.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're saying it's important for students to attend school and this is why, having our community partners also conveying that to their employees, you know, if they're at the doctor's office, you know, having a conversation with the student and the family about how their child's attendance is doing, all these different, you know, ways in which we can get the message across to our families that school is important. Mm-hmm. The more we have doing that, the better off we will be. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Before we get away here, you wanted to mention you need a budget committee member.
We do. So by October 31st, applications are due for budget committee. And so in order to do this, you need to be a registered voter, and you can't be an officer or an employee of the school district.
Mm-hmm.
But we are looking for someone in Zone 1, which is the Parkdale area. So if there is someone in Zone 1 and has an interest in applying, you have until October 31st. You can reach out to Megan West. She is our school board administrative assistant, and she can then put you in touch with the application and so forth.
Bill Newton, Hood River County School District Superintendent, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Bottom of the hour news coming up next.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-230-2777. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-230-2777. That's 800-230-2777. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-230-2777. 800-230-2777.
Seasons change, but the toughness of a Ram truck never does. Choose your new Ram truck now during the Drive Into Fall event at C.H. Ernest Motors. You'll drive into fall with some amazing deals on select new Ram heavy-duty and light-duty trucks. Come in, talk with a certified expert today. Take a test drive and order exactly the new Ram truck you want. C.H. Ernest Motors. Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Built to serve since 1946 between Fred Meyer and Safeway in the Dalles. Online at ErnestMotors.com.
At the Springs at Mill Creek Assisted Living Community, we believe in living with purpose and enjoying life to its fullest. Nestled at 1201 West 10th Street, the Dalles, our community offers more than just a place to stay. Imagine dining on your schedule from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., choosing your meals from a full menu that suits your taste and lifestyle. Here, every day is an opportunity to thrive, connect, and embrace the joys of life. Discover a vibrant community where you decide how to spend your day. Visit the Springs at Mill Creek because your best life is waiting.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the Gorge's local coffee roasters, on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
It is 8:33 in the morning. I'm sorry, Bill Newton and I were talking. I went off microphone, and poor Cameron's sitting there going, "Get to the microphone." Oh, the stress of producing this show. Here's what we got for the news. An appeals court on Monday put on hold a lower court ruling that kept President Donald Trump from taking command of 200 Oregon National Guard troops However, Trump is still barred from actually deploying those troops, at least for now. U.S. District Judge Karen Emmercut issued two temporary restraining orders earlier this month. One that prohibited Trump from calling up the troops he could send to Portland. Another that prohibited him from sending any National Guard members to Oregon at all. The Justice Department appealed the first order. They are looking for the second one to be dismissed. However, the state of Oregon is asking the decision go to the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The 1 in 6 Oregonians who rely on federal SNAP food and nutrition assistance to pay for groceries each month will be left with nothing in November due to the ongoing government shutdown, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Human Services. The federal government funds nearly all the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, with states administering the program. But USDA wrote to states on October 10th they should not distribute November assistance. If Congress's lapse in appropriations continued, because there would be insufficient funding to send to states for the program's beneficiaries. It's expected to take between 7 to 12 months for all the details to be finalized on a proposed sale of about 12 acres at the Lower Hanlo Mill site from the Port of Hood River to Amazon. Amazon proposes to place a nearly 50,000-square-foot warehouse and distribution center at the site. Port of Hood River Executive Director Kevin Greenwood says how many jobs will be developed at the center is not known, but he notes a similar facility in Tillamook employs 40 to 50 people. There will soon be fewer steelhead released into Washington's waters due to the impending closure of Skamania Hatchery. Located in Washougal, the hatchery produces summer and winter steelhead that are released into southwest Washington rivers for recreational fishing. The Washington State Standard reports operations at Skamania Hatchery will begin to slow over the next year as the State Department of Fish and Wildlife begins the three-year process of closing the facility. The Washougal and Beaver Creek hatcheries will take over some steelhead production. The Department of Fish and Wildlife announced its decision to close Skamania Hatchery in June after not receiving the full two-year budget request from the state legislature. Weather forecast supposed to be sunny today. High temperatures should end up being in the mid-60s. The wind's fairly light. Currently 44 degrees in Stevenson, 42 in the Dalles, 43 in Hood River. White Salmon Mayor Marla Keeler coming up next.
It's time to go to Jack's. Jack's Body Shop and Rhino Linings of the Gorge. Jack's Body Shop and Rhino Linings of the Gorge is a family-owned auto body collision repair and paint shop that's been a part of our community since 1969. Jack's uses only top-quality products and backs their work with a lifetime warranty on craftsmanship. Jack's Body Shop and Rhino Linings of the Gorge. 621 East 2nd Street, downtown The Dalles. 296-9170. Online at jacksbodyshop.net. Jack's Body Shop and Rhino Linings of the Gorge.
Rage Graphics and Design.
Get the word out!
Our business is making your business noticed. Sign design, three-dimensional carved signs, banners, embroidery.
Get the word out!
At Rage Graphics and Design, we use the leading edge of technology to help you.
Get the word out!
Your business, your logo, your advertising. Let's come up with your design together. 217 East 3rd Street in the Dalles. Call 296-SIGN. Online at RageGraphicsWithAnX.com.
Get the word out!
How can you measure the value of education-based athletics? Well, the value is in what makes it invaluable. That's because school sports aren't just about winning. They're about learning and growing. School sports aren't just about gaining trophies and accolades. They're about learning life lessons, bringing a whole community together, developing character and integrity, having coaches who mentor you and teammates who become lifelong friends. And you can't put a price on any of that. That's what makes education-based athletics invaluable. Of course, when you participate in school sports, you want to win and become a better athlete. But the purpose is so much greater, becoming a better person. Support your local school sports programs. And if you have a student, encourage them to get involved.
This message presented by the OSAA and the Oregon Athletic Directors Association.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, 98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark Bailey.
8:38 in the morning. We now have with us on the telephone the mayor of White Salmon, Marla Keeler. Good morning, Marla. Good morning.
Hi there, Mark. How are you?
Hi there. You left us for a second.
I was just keeping you on your toes. We've had such a hard time connecting the last couple months.
That is true. You've got us on our toes. Well, thanks for being with us, Marla. I believe Thursday you're having a open house about the Bluff Connector Trail.
We are. So this is the final open house of the first phase. We received a grant fund about 2 years ago to really move forward with a concept that had been certainly talked about at City Hall, and definitely some local community members that have been enthusiastic about the idea of bringing back a bluff trail that had those stairs that used to connect White Salmon and Benjamin. But the city received this funding to kind of expand that concept and try to create a loop trail. And the goal there would be to get out in front of a project like that, anticipating that once that new bridge is built and in place and bikers and pedestrians are walking over to the North Shore, that we provide a way for them to access up into downtown White Salmon from the riverfront. So this first phase was really to kind of scope the concept, understand what the viable routes would be if we wanted to create a true loop, mm-hmm. and what the necessary engineering or next steps would require depending on the path chosen. And throughout this process, we've had two other open house events over the last year, and this one will be to come back to the public and update them on how we integrated some of their feedback, and then really share with the people what we see the next step being. This project, currently the work that's being done was through a federal grant, Transportation Alternatives Program, but we already have the next $1 million secured, and that was done with Senator King through the Move Ahead Washington Act. So that money gives us $1 million in this current biennium, and so we're really focused on making sure that this next phase activates that $1 million in a way that does see some access onto the trail and moves the concept forward and doesn't just keep us in a planning mode.
You mentioned there used to be stairs from White Salmon to Benjamin. Kind of describe what used to be there.
Yeah, so from the late 1800s to maybe earlier 1900s, there was a wooden stairway that linked White Salmon and Benjamin. And so, you know, there's a lot of folklore and wonderful pictures through the Gorge Heritage Museum and people that have really tried to bring back the history and the stories around that trail itself. But our goal is to also return stairs, but make them more accessible. So having some access points for those people that might not want to hike a 600 staircase, but also create a path that would send people more eastward. So kind of following that line of dot grade, but in a safe way for pedestrian walkers and bikers to come up into town and then loop you into downtown and back to the trailhead where the stairs would be, which would be just west of our downtown core.
And there, I was going to ask, you mentioned accessible. I was wondering, many things that were built, you know, in the era that you're talking about, because of the laws, ADA, et cetera, that we have today, you wouldn't necessarily be able to build them. I'm wondering, you know, with the image you mentioned, you're not trying to build the same straight up 600 stairway, but can you build even a remote replica of it given today's standards?
Well, that's tricky, and it's definitely been a big part of this first phase of work is the ADA requirements, because once any project receives a dollar of federal funding, and again, this first phase was funded through a federal grant, you are tied forever to meeting those ADA requirements, even if all the subsequent funding is not from a federal source. And so it's been a very key focus area for us to figure out and understand how can we make this an experience that everyone can enjoy. And the way that we're approaching that is seeing it more holistically. So the stairs, to your point, and obviously just the terrain that exists and the laws today, it would be nearly impossible to really envision how we would create those stairs in a way that everyone can access, that's at a cost that we could shoulder as a community and actually realize that project getting implemented. And that's why we're really looking at the loop. You know, what is that experience that's available to everyone to be able to come from the riverfront into downtown in a way that's safe and appropriate and fitting for however they may be accessing that trail. And so that's why we're really looking at what is the rest of that circle, more or less, that is, includes the stairs. But we're not seeing this as just about returning the stairs, because in today's, you know, landscape, literally and figuratively, it really is not a project that could be replicated in the same way that it was done, you know, back in the 1800s.
So, do we have an idea of how much to do this trail would cost overall? I mean, you're kind of going in piecemeal right now.
Yeah, well, Mark, I feel like I shouldn't give you the answer and instead entice you to come across the river to the open house. But, you know, like many of these projects, you go through these phases and you get those estimates. And so at this point, with all things considered, and again, really taking to heart the requirements of ADA and how can we be as expansive as possible to create as much access for everyone on this trail, depending on the path chosen, because we looked at a couple different routes, that you could piece together to form a few different loop approaches. It varies in estimate right now, anywhere from 5 million to 7 million. So there's definitely a sticker shock there. And again, you know, we really want to make sure that people that are coming to engage in this project or have been following it or are learning about it for the first time on Thursday really hear and understand that for the city, we are focused on making sure that this $1 million returns some results in the next phase and that we don't just go into the next level of design engineering to get a little bit closer to shovel ready. And a lot of that is also informed by what we've heard from the community in terms of wildfire mitigation. And so even though this total project price, as we see development of all the phases, could be, likely will be, a multi-million dollar project, we want to make sure that this next phase, which we know is fully funded and gives us $1 million to achieve something, that we focus on some of the comments and feedback we heard, which is really how do we create some initial access where we know this trail eventually will get built out further, but it also achieves another goal we have on that bluff, which is better access for wildfire mitigation. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for our partners that are already doing work on the bluff, but hopefully making it more accessible for volunteers and people that we may enlist through some of the wildfire ready efforts that the fire authority and a lot of our neighborhoods are organizing around. And so, you know, again, 5 to 7 million is a daunting price tag on anything when you're a town of 2,500. Mm-hmm. And we're also realistic and practical. We've got a lot of infrastructure projects and other areas that we're trying to focus our funding pursuits on. But we've been successful so far securing and receiving funding to keep this project moving forward. So we want to do it in a very intentional and realistic way mm-hmm. and not look back and feel like we missed an opportunity when we had money to activate.
Mm-hmm. You know, beyond doing this first part with $1 million you have, does there reach a point of this where the bridge has to be, if not completed, underway, you know, physically underway before it's worth continuing?
You know, that's a good question. We've certainly been thinking about it, knowing we've got some lead time, but we need to take advantage of it. And that bridge being completed and built and all of us driving across of it, realistically, there's probably a window of time there in the early 2030s when we see that happen. And so we certainly feel on track to realize the benefits of the bridge. But I would say there's already other efforts underway. You know, Bingen is doing a lot. We're seeing housing getting developed down on the riverfront in the city of Bingen. There's already been public access along 14. They're doing improvements into the accessibility into their town. And so I think that there's other ways that the riverfront is envisioned to be activated. The bridge is the biggest tipping point, no question. But assuming that we stay on track with the bridge, I think all of these things will intersect quite nicely. If something delays the bridge, we're not sitting there judging how much we move our project forward on whether or not it's aligning with that bridge timeline, because I think there's a lot of variables there that we know we can't control. And we think that this benefit is something that our community hasn't had for a long time. You know, when I came into the city council, they were then receiving a report on a vision for a riverfront park, and that's still envisioned to get realized, also trying to sync that up with the bridge project. So there's a lot of focus over the years about how do we make the White Salmon and Bingen riverfront access more beneficial for our community members, and I do think that this is part of that overall vision.
I say, when we talk about this sort of a trail being put together, I get the impression, at least, that this is more of a thought of local access than it is necessary. Because you mentioned at the top, you know, the bridge opens up and people walking across it, which is going to be a pretty good hike, by the way, no matter what the bridge is.
Yes.
it's still going to be a pretty good hike on this in this area. So which lends me to, I mean, is the thought of this, though, that this is more of a local project for local people?
I mean, the primary focus, the first focus is certainly the local community. You know, when we did our park system plan, we had a lot of feedback from community members about better access all through town, not just to focus on acquiring or improving the current green space we have. But it would be foolish to not also be thinking about and trying to leverage such an investment in our community for how it could also benefit or attract visitors that are already coming into the gorge. I mean, I think you can just observe the waterfront activity in Hood River and the improvements that have been made there over the years and see how that does bring visitors in or entice them to spend time and in that then money and investment into our local businesses. And so I think that's some of our hope too, is, you know, we've seen our businesses really activate in recent years, and they've been wonderful in supporting and building up a lot of these events that are starting to fill out the year-round calendar of White Salmon. But the reality is our downtown is not along State Route 14. Mm-hmm. And so many people still find White Salmon, but we do think that when that new bridge is built, there will be certainly more curiosity seekers, or just people who, as crazy as it sounds, may want to walk across. I think e-bikes will probably be more appealing, but once they're here, how are we enticing and also helping to get them up to discover the downtown core of White Salmon? Because our businesses and the vibrancy that we've seen in our downtown, yes, our local residents support it, but they need the outside seasonal tourism support as well.
Mm-hmm. So again, you're going to have the Bluff Connector Trail Study Community Open House. It is Thursday evening. It'll be 5:30 at the City Council Chambers at the White Salmon Fire Hall on 119 Northeast Church. For those who are interested in checking out what they've got there. I got a couple. I think also I should know, I believe, is this available online as well?
Yes. If you go to our website, it's under news. It'll be the first category. You can find out more information about the work that's been done on the Bluff Trail. And as you mentioned, the details about the open house on Thursday.
Got about 3 or 4 minutes left here, so not a lot of time, but what else are you guys working on right now?
Well, it's budget season, and yes. So we had a good workshop with our city council last week to get some input about how we've been focusing through our different departments on achieving some of their priorities from last year and getting a sense of where their heads are at looking at 26. We've got this open house we just talked about on Thursday, but next week there's a really exciting community opportunity. A lot of local agencies came together to realize a grant through SWATCH, which is Southwest Washington Community Health Support Systems. And they are reviving what used to be the Comprehensive Healthcare Building to create a Community Roots Wellness Hub. And that'll be an opportunity for all of the community to come see what's going on there October 29th. And that's really about trying to consolidate services so people can really have a one-stop shop to better access mental, behavioral health, but also community services that WAGAP, Nextdoor, Culture Seed, and other partners provide. And, you know, like I said, it's been a couple months since we've talked, which feels weird, Mark. You've been a constant in my life now for like 6 years. But we had a great meeting last week with the Red Cross. You know, Bordeaux Fire is, for those that were impacted by it, it does not feel like it happened a long time ago. It's still very top of mind. And for us as an agency, you know, it was great to get back together with the team that came out here from the Red Cross and some of those volunteers, but also the school district, who was a key partner, and leadership over at Grace Baptist, who helped provide one of the shelters, and really do a debrief, you know, come together, revisit what worked, what didn't work. So hopefully we're better set up for the next fire, because I think all of us operate in a mindset that there's never going to be the last one. And on that note, Representative Newhouse was out here last week. And so we sent one of our city councilors and presented with him to him some policy changes that we're recommending at the federal level, just having observed the impacts of that fire and some of the difficulty in getting the recovery phase really up and running. And so it seemed to be well received, and we're looking forward to sharing that with the rest of our elected leadership out in D.C. So we're staying busy, that's for sure.
We only got a minute left here, so I'm probably asking this very unfairly, but what sort of policy changes is the city suggesting at the federal level in dealing with these fires?
Yeah, so I would say three. Let's see if I can rattle through them. Okay. The one that was an eye-opener is that a federal designation for opening up physical disaster loans requires 25 primary residences to be lost. And so we saw that in a fire like Bordeaux Fire, we might not have met that threshold. We're still trying some other ways. If you can get so many businesses that can show a loss, you can maybe still meet the threshold. But one recommendation there is to allow lower thresholds down to 10 to 15 primary residences in rural areas, because that's a significant impact and costly if that burden is carried only at the local level. And another thing we've seen, especially out here, and you see it in Bordeaux Fire, I think Club A and Gorge News did a great profile about homeowners that had done some of the defensible space work ahead of time through some grants that are provided. But a tricky thing is that right now those grants require you to bring in contractors, which are often in short supply, especially in the high season of fire preparedness. And so what we're proposing is something that we've seen even our neighbors to the north in Canada do, where you can actually reimburse the homeowner to do some of that mitigation work. And we think that's something that would really benefit rural areas, but also probably get more people engaged in the program. And then finally, what we're seeing, especially in that recovery, you know, a lot of that, when successful, is very much community-led, so often long-term recovery groups. But if you don't have a federal disaster declaration and you haven't been preparing to fund a recovery group to get off the ground, it can be hard to find those initial dollars that will seed that kind of an effort. But through the EDA, they have disaster supplemental readiness path programs. But again, they tie it to the federal level of disaster declarations and trying to propose potentially a pilot program where if you can show that your disaster met a state level determination, or again, if they were to lessen those SBA requirements, if you met that new threshold, could that open up a pathway to see some small amounts of money that could help really launch these communities when they're trying to get that long-term recovery group off the ground? So we're really focusing on those three things. They were direct impacts that we saw and effects that felt like barriers at the time. And so we don't want to kind of lose sight of that. And hopefully get some momentum on talking about changes there.
White Sand Mayor Marla Keeler, our guest. Marla, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Mark. Enjoyed it.
It is 8:55 in the morning.
You know
we'll
that
be
expression,
back.
Put a little spring in your step? Well, whoever said it must have been talking about GlideStep hands-free Skechers slip-ins. Because with GlideStep, you get a pillow-like soft landing, then an explosive takeoff. It makes walking feel effortless. So springy, it's almost like you're floating. And speaking of effortless, have you tried hands-free Skechers slip-ins technology? Just step in and instantly your shoes are on. No bending down and no touching. Try GlideStep hands-free Skechers slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Are missing teeth holding you back? Imagine a life where you can smile confidently, enjoy every bite of your favorite foods, and feel better at work and in romance. Friday, October 24th, Mountain and River Dental Associates in Hood River invites you to a free dental implant seminar. Discover how this life-changing procedure will restore your smile and learn about the benefits of having permanent teeth. Just listen to what their patients have to say.
Excellent care before, during, and after my dental implant procedure. Dr. Carly does an amazing job and has restored not just my smile, but my confidence too. Thanks, Dr. Carly.
When you sign up for our free seminar, you'll automatically receive a free implant consultation with full mouth digital x-rays and an exam valued at $500. But hurry, seats are limited. Call now to reserve your spot at 541-386-3525. That's 541-386-3525. Call Mountain and River Dental Associates, 541-386-3525. 541-386-3525 today.
I'm Dr. Carolee Christensen. I'm a wife, I'm a mom of twin boys, and a proud dog mom. I'm also a breast radiologist. Being a part of Skyline is so rewarding to get to work and provide care in the place that I call home. As the only breast radiologist subspecialty trained and fellowship trained in the Gorge, I'm really proud to offer a level of service deserving of the women in this community. What truly sets Skyline apart is its unwavering commitment to the people in this beautiful setting. I am Skyline.
Hey, it's Angela from Cedar Creek Alpacas. We love this time of year. It means baby alpacas. Come meet the newest, cutest members of the herd, stroll the pastures, and stop by the alpaca shop to see what's new. Got family visiting? Bring them out and experience why we were voted best of the Gorge for attraction and family entertainment. Cedar Creek Alpacas is a great place for holiday shopping. We have gifts for everyone from 1 to 100. It's fun, it's fluffy, and it's all waiting for you at Cedar Creek Alpacas, just 15 minutes west of the Hood River Bridge in Cook, Washington.
Tune in weekday mornings at 8:05 and keep up with community events and issues with the Mid-Columbia Today Show on Mid-Columbia's News Leaders, 98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR.
8:58 in the morning. I know we got to run here pretty quickly. We'll tell you what's coming up on the show tomorrow. Heather Walker, Hood River County Christmas Projects. It's that time of year again. They're starting, I assume, where they'll be starting if they have not started to take signups for that. And, of course, they're looking for volunteers as well to help distribute food and gift boxes around the community. And also, Juan Reyes from WAGAP, the Tree of Joy program. They operate in Clickitans Community County. So we're talking about I know usually I don't like to talk about the holidays this far out. However, these are important things that they're working on to be ready for the holidays. So we'll spend the time doing that. Thursday, we'll talk Columbia Gorge Community College. And I believe Jared Gilbert, VP of Instruction, is going to be with us. And on Friday, boy, that guy in the band just wanted to rock out. On Friday, Master Gardeners. We'll talk for them for one more time this year. This will be the last time during this year because we take our usual holiday break with them for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But that's what's coming up on MCT over the next little while. But we're done. For Cameron Eisenberg, I'm Mark Bailey. And we'll be talking to you again on Wednesday.
Mid-Columbia Today Show is a public affairs presentation of Bi-Coastal Media, Columbia River. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station, parent company, or of the sponsors. We welcome your suggestions for future shows. Call us at 541-386-1511. If you've missed any of today's show, go online to gorgeradio.com and click on Local On Demand for our podcast version. Thank you for listening to Mid-Columbia Today.
Today.